Today's Perek Yishmuel Beit, Perek Aleph. Again, I just want to make sure that we're all clear about the fact there is no such book as Yishmuel Beit. There's simply Shmuel, nor are there any real prokim. Those are all a made-up idea by the Goyim who translated the Bible. However, for your convenience, listening convenience and reading convenience, we'll continue this pretense. It's also a lot easier to have only, I guess, 30 prokem or so on the computer screen than to have, you know, 60, so we'll pretend that it's a different book. And the reason, of course, that they chose this as a different book is because our split screens have ended. We're no longer going to be contrasting the events that are taking place in Shaul and the events that are taking place with David on two sides of the screen. For the first time, we have now the events come together. But remarkably, they come together, of all things, through Amalek. And as we know, our two screens had actually, on one side, what was happening to Shaul as a result of not having destroyed Amalek, and on the other side, what was happening to David as a result of having destroyed Amalek. So that the Tziklag Amalek was very related to the loss of Shaul's life and family because of what had happened in Amalek. And, interestingly enough, the connection between the two events is born, tidings are born by someone from Amalek. So here comes David from his attack on Amalek. Without knowing anything of what's happening on the other side of the screen. David was there for 2 days in Tziklag before even finding out anything. And, by the way, we've seen this yamim being used before, where everybody was saying, well, he's very suspicious. Yamim usually means years. Well, here obviously means days. Vayihi bayom ha-shelishi, v'nei ish ba min ha-machaneh me'im Shaul, uvegadav kiru'im v'yadama rosho. And here, now, for the second time, we have the Adama Rosho. It's all the irony. Shaul was the one that was Adama Rosho. When he was coming with the luchas that he had grabbed from Goliath, you will recall. So he was the one that was coming with Adama Rosho to tell Eli about the fact that the Aron Elohim had been nishba. We now have someone coming, Me'im Shaul, with Adama Rosho and Begadav Kru'im, the same exact language, to tell us about the destruction of Shaul. And so he comes running up to David, falling on the ground and bowing in front of him, breathless. Where are you coming from? I escaped from the Machane. So what happened? I've been waiting for some news. It was a rout, a disaster. Vayamutu, many people were killed. Vegam Shaul, Yonatan beno, metu. And Shaul and his son Yonatan also died. Now, remember that the vision that we have of what was left behind is inconceivable for David. We're sort of used to the fact we just ended a parak of such utter desolation. You're talking about a battlefield. All you can see is vultures circling. There was nobody there. Shaul and Yonatan are lying dead overnight. They're only discovered when the plishtim get around to waking up the next morning and figuring that they'll haul in the take. And then accidentally discover that here is Shaul and Yonatan. It's a horrific scene. You're not talking about Stam, a battlefield. You're talking about a battlefield that there's nothing left on. It's complete, hopeless. Everybody has run away. David has no idea. Run away doesn't mean they've run away from the battlefield. Run away means they've left the country. As we saw before, they went to Eir HaYarden. This was not a typical route. This was total war, complete destruction. For all intents and purposes, nothing left of the country. The Plishtim have gone and sat in the cities. Vayeshvu ba'areihem, something that is completely beyond his capacity to even imagine. In his worst hours. This is not just that Shaul and Yonatan were killed in a battle. This is... You're describing now something that is utter, complete desolation with nothing left behind. And that's exactly what it was. And the truth is that it brings out the same sense of utter ruination that you have when you look at something that you believed in and it turns out all to be ashes. Right? I mean, this is, as we talked about yesterday, this is the Melech HaRishon. Dies unnoticed on a field? This is crazy. So in other words, the whole thing was a fake. His head is cut off, taken to the temple of the Plishtim, hung up, his body is screwed onto the wall. I mean, it's insane. So it really makes it look as if the entire period of the Ha'amadat HaMalchut was just a big mistake. It was all just a joke. But the whole Mif'al HaHityashvut, so to speak, was a mistake. It was really the way that people, remember what people were feeling right before the Six-Day War? Oh, yeah. And somebody put up a sign, last one's out, please put out the lights. There was that sense of complete and utter, boy, have we been fooling ourselves. Like, how did we think we were going to survive in this area? You know, that's total hopelessness. So this guy comes, describes a scene, which is crazy. So he's going to have to now make sure that this is for real, because it sounds impossible. So Vayomer David el ha'nar ha'magido, no, wait a second. You're saying everybody ran away. It was a complete rout. And Shaul and Yonatan were also, Echedata kimet Shaul and Yonatan. So how do you even know? How do you know what's going on? If it's a complete rout, you know what kind of rumors go around? Vayomer ha'nar ha'magido. So the boy that had come to tell him the story said, look, I'll tell you the story from the beginning. I actually was not even part of the army, which of course was not the way he presented himself originally. I managed to escape. It sounded like a hero. Well, so now it turns out that actually I just happened upon the place. Nikro nikreti bahar gilmoa. And there I find Shaul nish'an al chanito. He is not dead. He has stabbed himself. V'nei arechav u'bale ha'parashim idbiku. And he was about to be taken by the plishtim. Vayif and acharav, he's looking around. Vayareni, and he sees me. Vayikraila, he calls me over. Vayomar, and I say, I am at your service. Hineni. Vayomar li miata. Who are you? What a last guy to meet. Vayomar elav amaleki anochi, which of course is nikro nikreti. I have been invited to bring you some carry. Asher karcha baderech. So this was now like the last guy that Shaul expects to meet, is that he's here in this position because of the fact that he allowed the Amalekim to live, right? So I tell him, and I'm an Amaleki. Vayomar elai amodna alayum toteni. Please, stand on me and kill me. Because I'm going into shock. It's still living, and I can't have these guys get me. And so I stood there and I killed him because I knew he was in pain. And so I came running here to bring you his crown and his personal bracelet as a sign of the Malchut, and to bring you the Malchut. Now, the tone of the Amaleki is intolerable. First of all, that it's ingratiating and that he thinks he's doing David a big favor by bringing him the crown after having stabbed Shaul, and that he really was just there to make certain that Shaul wouldn't suffer too much, and Shaul didn't die naturally because he wasn't ready to die naturally. I mean, the whole thing was just a tremendous bizoyan, not only a bizoyan, but also it says, if David is sitting here waiting, I can't wait until I get the crown and the bracelet of Shaul. After all, this is what I've really been looking for the past years, and I'm so happy that you killed him. You know, it would have been a shame for him just to have died.
He's probably waiting for a reward.
He is waiting for a reward. Obviously, that's the whole point. So he first positioned himself in this very romantic way, which is a terrible thing. He's got Adama Rosho, and it turns out he's the guy who killed him. He just happened to walk along and just happens to have the crown of Shaul. Now, whether any of this happened isn't even clear, because certainly the mashmaut of the previous parak was that Shaul had killed himself. There were no plishtim around. There were only the marksmen of the plishtim, that he was afraid that they would be able to shoot him, wound him, and then take him and make sport of him, which would be a bizarre for Yisrael, and therefore wanted to make sure that such a thing wouldn't happen. So many of them in Farshim say the guy made up the whole thing. Perhaps he didn't make up the whole thing. Perhaps there was some life left in Shaul, but it's irrelevant. David's reaction was exactly the opposite of what the guy thought. Vayachazek David bibgadav vayikra'im v'gam kol anashim asherito. He took hold of his begadim and tore them, as did everyone who was with him. Vayispedu vayifku, and so they gave hespedim and they cried and they had a tzom. Al Shaul ve'al Yonatan beno ve'al Amadunoi ve'al Beit Yisrael ki naflu becharev. on, and from we learn all kinds of halachas from here. This is the Makor in the Torah, A, that Kriya has to be at least a Tefach. We learn out from here because it says Vayechazek David Bibigadav and Ein Vayechazek Pachot Mitefach, because that's how much it takes to hold on to a baguette in order to, there must be at least a Tefach there. From here you learn that you're Kireya al Besarot Raot. From here you learn that you're Korea on a Nasi that died, or on an Av Beit Din that died, because Shaul was the din of a Melech as a Nasi. Yonatan had the din of the Av Beit Din. And the way we understand the Am Hashem is the Yudalim Sheba'am, and Beit Yisrael are the everybody. And so after this reaction, according to some of the Mefarshim, he's asking a question whose answer he knows because he wants to do something publicly to make a show. Emi Zata, where do you come from? Vayomer ben Ish Gera Malek Yanov. Vayomer Elav David. You think this was good news? And you think you're a hero for killing the Mashiach Hashem? You know, I had plenty of opportunities to do that. Couldn't get me to do it, even though he was chayev as a rodeif. So what are you saying? There was a heter to kill him for some purpose? Get rid of this guy. And so he kills him on the spot. Vayomre elav David, damcha roshecha. You have spilled your own blood, buddy. Kipicha anavech alimor. Your own mouth testified against you to say, Anochi motati et Mashiach Adonai. Now again, obviously, as all Mefarshim point out, this could only be a hora'at sha'a. I mean, there is no such thing as being mechayev yourself the way that you speak to say, I killed. I mean, it's a moda. Moda is not chayav. It's clear that the entire thing was not simply hora'at sha'a about this person, but that it was an absolute essential moment in the passing over the Malchut. No one could think that David would be happy at the death of Shaul, or would reward someone for being involved in the death of Shaul, or would be joyful at having received the crown from Shaul, as if that's something that needed to be done. This interference of mechanics is a classic Amalek interference, in which you think we need you to do something in a particular way, and you'll control it. That was what went wrong with Shaul. So had he not killed this guy, had he not done what he did, the milchama between Beit Shaul, Binyamin, and Yehuda would have been much more disastrous than it was. As it is, his immediate response, we'll see later, to the Anshe Yadesh Gilad, who had been Mechabit Shaul, and his response here to the Amaleki, who was Mavaza Shaul, need to be seen within the context of a tremendously important, from the level of pure politics, but it's not Chas V'Shalom, pure politics. It's an expression of his vision and understanding of what the Malchut has to be. So whereas, obviously, in the movies, this would be an exciting moment. The crown of your enemy is being brought to you, courtesy of, and I bow down flat on my face, and the first one to call you king. Don't forget that. And in this case, it costs you your head. Vaykonin David et akina zot al Shaul v'al Yonatan beno. And so David now wrote this poem, this dirge, and sang over the death of Shaul and Yonatan his son. Vayomer lelamed b'nei Yehuda kashet, hinei chetuva al sefer hayasha. Now this is a remarkable and very strange pasuk. Doesn't seem to be part of a dirge at all. And yet it's included after the words akina hazot. It seems to be saying, Vayomer lelamed b'nei Yehuda kashet, is that, well, it looks like we're going to have to build up our army and get ourselves a bunch of sharpshooters. And after all, does it not say in the Sefer HaYashar, does it not say in the Torah, that the Darga of Yehuda is Yadcha al Oref Oivecha? And as the Gemara points out, what type of weapon requires Yad Keneged Oref? The bow. You're going to pull the bow back behind your neck and let go. What? But this has absolutely nothing to do with the Kina. Indeed, some of the Farshim say, well, look, he's only saying this because he figures they've all lost hope. So before they lose hope, he's going to give a kina, so he has to tell them, you know, it's not all over yet. We can rebuild. We'll rebuild an army from Yehuda. We'll teach them modern weaponry and so on. Of course, that's an insufficient explanation. What actually has happened here is something very, very profound. You'll notice that throughout the entire book, there have been two completely different approaches to war. One has been warring with the sword. One has been warring with the bow. We'll see later on that it's Yonatan who's been warring with the bow. And of course, he was the one that was practicing with the chitzim. But later on, David is going to make, just a few psukim later, David is going to make reference to Keshet Yonatan and Cherev Shaul. Not coincidentally. It was the Cherev Shaul that, in fact, David refused to take with him, instead of opting for the slingshot. The Cherev in Biyado. When Yonatan went up to fight, he didn't go up to fight with the Cherev. As a matter of fact, that whole hilarious scene of the milling crowds among the Plishtim, where Shaul says, somebody must be missing. Just check, will you? Oh, no, it's Yonatan again. There's an entirely different approach to warring. The truth is that Shaul's death was very remarkably contrasted to Malchishua and Yonatan. In other words, there it says, V'ad biku Plishtim. So the Plishtim actually got them. And they weren't shooting at them. It was a sword battle. Masha'inkin, when it came to Shaul, it says he was terrified of the Yorim, which is very strange. What do you mean you're terrified of the Yorim? It's like anything else in war. Is it not? But obviously, it's not. In other words, does it make sense for Shaul to be going into a war where there are Yorim with a sword? What good is a sword going to do you when people are sharpshooting you from 100 meters away? The whole thing is very strange. So why was he warring with a sword? And the truth is that we know that Becharbi Upakashti goes all the way back to Yaakov Avinu. And there's a discussion of what that Becharbi Upakashti means in terms of Shechem. The way that the Targum is Masbir Becharbi Upakashti, you'll recall, this is what the Gemara understands, is that it's entirely intellectual. So it's Bitzluti Ebevoti. Bekashti is the word for Bakasha. So it means the Bakashat of Tvila. Bechuchmati, it may be, the Becharbi. Because after all, when somebody's very smart, we call him sharp. That's Shinana. That's Cherub. That's the clay milchama from Milcham Tashal Torah. We use exactly the same. They're not metaphors. They are the realities of the way in which you face battle. There's different ways of facing battle. The truth is that Shaul's original vision of milchama was a regression, in a sense, to an earlier time. Before there was the whole idea, which we had seen earlier, making up special troops that were sharpshooters and so on and so forth. The idea of war was a question of gevura. Gevura had nothing to do with being able to pull a trigger. Anybody could pull a trigger. Anybody could sit at a distance and pull a trigger. You don't have to be a gibor. You have to be able to play a video game. That's all. What does it have to do with gevura? So the nature of milchama up until this war, and this is very similar, same way you had in the American Civil War, there was a change in the nature of armament, same thing that happens in the First World War, but the beginning of air power, there's a change in the nature of armament. Things were looked at. You still had people marching on horses in World War I. Why? Not because they think that's a great way to make war, but because that's how you make war. Not because I'm sorry, we look back and say, they're stupid, are they crazy? I've seen they're taking in horses into mortars. What are they thinking, Bichlal? You look back and they sound crazy. It's exactly the same. They look back at Shaul and he sounds crazy. And he's Vayachal Ma'od Mi'amorim. Well, obviously, you could figure that out in the first place. But the idea was there was a nature of war in which it was understood that the laws of war, they're not laws that you ascribe to because of fairness. They're the nature of how you understand milchama as being an indication of greater strength. So nobody would have thought that dropping an atom bomb on somebody is an expression of gevura of any kind. What kind of war is that? It shows that you're weak. It doesn't show that you're strong. It's like the Americans dropping napalm over Vietnam. That was an act of weakness. It undermined their position. It lost them the war, not won them the war. So up until the time of Shaul, the nature of war was as Golias himself said. What do we got to fight for? There's nothing to fight. Let's just see whose champion wins. It's all about showing the gevura, right? So we've got the heroes. Let them face each other, because that's what it's about. Shaul recognized in this war that heroism stands for nothing anymore. And he finds this out because his own heroism stood for nothing. He was terrified. And going into a war like that, where the whole point of the war is showing gevura, is a joke. Of course it turned into a rout. And that's exactly what Shmuel told Shaul in Ein Dor. He said to him, V'gam, and you should know also, besides you dying, V'gam HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be Meiser Yisrael B'yad Plishtim, meaning it's part of you, that's why it's V'gam. Because this is the way that you are looking at things. You can't handle gevura anymore, except as an Amalekite who tries to get things done by that's Doeg, that's Edom, that's Al Charba Chatichya. We have no connection to Al Charba Chatichya. So if you're able to assume that Cherub in terms of Becharbi Ubekashti like Yaakov, so then it becomes meaningful. But if to you it's just a weapon of war, you're fighting the wrong war in the wrong century. And this is finally, together with the collapse of everything else, this is what hits Shaul over the head in this war. Therefore, the first thing that David says in his kina is that we've reached the end of an entire period of the way that human beings view their interaction with the world. There aren't going to be any more swords. It's not going to be about swords. Now it's about technology. Now it's about aiming. The period of the hero is over. Why? Because Shaul was the last of the big heroes. That's the point. And that's why it's part of the kina. When Shaul fails, it means that heroism fails. And now what we need to do is recognize that the godless is in terms of not how powerful you are, but how accurate your missiles are, how well your nuclear technology will be, and that's the nature of Milchama from this point on. And was that not always Merumas? As Yoducha Achecha, the meaning of the moment of the Yerusha, of the Malchus by Yehuda, is the moment of Yadcha Alor Efoivecha. Therefore, he saw the passing on of the Malchus as a passing on of the nature of war itself, which is an amazing thing. And that's where it's Ksuva B'Sefer HaYashar, you see. Atzvi Yisrael, most beautiful of Yisrael. And Eretz Yisrael itself is called Eretz Tzvi. It's referring to Shaul himself, who's the most precious, beautiful thing in all of Yisrael. Abomotecha Chalal, to fall dead on your highest places. Eich Naflu Giborim, that's the point. Yore Keshet are not called Giborim. Eich Naflu Giborim, the last of the heroes, the mighty have fallen. Al Tagido Vigat, Al Tavasru B'chutzot Ashkelon. And this is exactly what Shaul was afraid of. Don't spread the tidings here in Ashkelon. Don't tell people. And of course they know, but that's not the point. Keep as much information as you can from them. Ben Tismachna Benot Plishtim, Ben Ta'alozna Benot Arelim. It's all about the way the women look at it, isn't it? They're the ones that were singing. They're the ones that were talking about the Shaul, his Gvura, David's Gvura. So now the Benot Arelim are ready to sing about the heroism of the Plishtim. That's ridiculous. Hareva Gilboa, all the mountains in the Gilboa, that on you this should have happened. Al Talvi Al Matar Alechem. There should be no longer any dew or rain that fall upon you. And no longer any sedate rumot. There shouldn't be any beautiful fields that are bringing the bounty of truma. Kisham Nigaal Magen Giborim. Magen Shaul B'lim Mashiach Bashan. For there was the place where the very shield of the heroes now was rejected, was forsaken, was thrown away. And in the simple sense of Shemen, Nigaal means to be polite, to exude that which was in it. So all of the grandeur that was in it, all of the Mashiach, of course, are remnants, not only to the simple fact that they used to oil the leather shields so that it could deflect now blades more easily, but literally it vomited out the Shemen of the Shemen HaMishka itself. Midam Chalalim, Mechelev Giborim, Keshet Yonatan Lo Nasagachor, V'cherev Shaul Lo Toshuv Rekam. For the blood of the slain enemies, from the fat of the bodies of their heroes. Yonatan's Keshet, Yonatan wasn't a sharpshooter. Yonatan fought directly, within 20 meters, he had killed all of those people, directly with his Keshet. Cherev Shaul would not now come back empty. They always used what they could. Shaul v'Yonatan hane'avim v'ne'imim v'chayehim. These were people that were always beloved, were always sweet in their lifetime to all. Uv'motam lo nifradu. In the Targum, they did not lose that connection, not to each other, but to sweetness and to being looked up to with love by everyone, even as they died in these circumstances. But the other meaning is astounding, because I mean it also clearly means, and the Mefarshim bring this out, is that lo nifradu from each other. Clearly lo nifradu from their vision, lo nifradu from their commitment to making war, lo nifradu from their bitachon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, lo nifradu from the midot that they had, but lo nifradu from each other, despite the fact, in other words, that we saw such tremendous, intense jealousies that were expressed in the relationship of Yonatan v'Shaul around David. Nonetheless, you should know that in the same way, and David is singing about this, that in the same way that every time that Shaul came back to himself, he loved me, you can be assured that he loved Yonatan far more, so that they never were nearly broken from each other. Minasharim kalu, me'arayot gaveru, they were literally, minasharim kalu, me'arayot gaveru, says the Medrash, because that was Shaul who in one day had run 120 kilometers, taking the Luchais from Goliath, running now and bringing them back to Eli. I mean, the strength that that involves, the speed that that involves. Benot Yisrael, El Sha'ul Bechena, daughters of Yisrael, weep over Sha'ul. Amal Bishchem Shanim Adanim, the one who pampered you with the most beautiful fine clothing and all types of Mifankim, that means all types of luxury. So everything that he had captured from the enemies all of these years were given out, cared for you. Amaleh Adi Zahav Alevushchem, who would give you not only the clothing, but the most beautiful jewelry of gold to wear with them. So here Chazal say, again, this is Shaul's, always Benot Yisrael is always a reference to the Bonim that are Tamidei Chachamim. Why are they called Bonais? Because they're weak, like a Bonais. Because Terez Mateshet Kocho Shel Adam. Just like you fight, you do. The boys call each other girls, the students. You know? Okay, girls, let's go. So here to Benot Yisrael. But Shaul was so mechaved, Tamidei Chachamim. This refers to the way in which he would care for Tamina. It says that Shaul, when he would hear a chiddush, he would go over and kiss the person who said the chiddush. Always. Eich naflu giborim betoch hamilchama. How in the middle of such a battle could such mighty have fallen? Yonatan, you, abomotecha chalal, to fallen on Har Gilboa? Tzarli alecha achi Yonatan, my brother Yonatan. There's nothing to make this up for me. I'll never be able to get out of that loss. Na'am talima od, you were extremely sweet to me. Niflata ahavat chali me'ahavat nashim. More wondrous was your love to me than the love of women. Because here it's a completely different level of love. Niflat is not just greater. Niflat means something on a different scale. That's what we call pella, is wondrous, strange, can't understand it. Something that I have no grasp of. So all love has in it mystery. But at least you can understand the love to women. But a love like this, in which the two of us should have been competitors, in which to find ourselves as twin souls, is such a mystery that will always be beyond me. Eich naflu giborim v'yavdu klei milchama. How the mighty have fallen, and the very weapons of war have gone now to waste. So, again, on one level, as Chazal tells us, this teaches us that the leaders in the Tamidei Chachamim are the weapons of war. So it was Shaul and Yonatan who were the klei milchama of Yisrael. But as we saw, the beginning of this really does discuss the klei milchama, the way in which war will be waged from this day on. Now the time of the giborim is over. So, eich naflu giborim. And yet, this is now his vision of the changes. And the truth is, if you take a look, I mean, this is very much in a Tolkien-esque fashion. Again, this difference between Legolas and Gimli is this difference. Whereas Legolas is the nature of elves to fight only from the distance with incredible vision and sharpness of a sharpshooting is always in terms of arrows. Gimli is of the earth and it was big and dwarfish and grub and he uses an axe, basically, you know, which is the ultimate sense of just, you know, let me just cleave it into two. You know, and they're going now into competition. Who gets more?
It's cold intellect versus hot passion as well.
Totally opposite warring, and yet they worked hand in hand, which is why that whole, you know, did you ever think we'd be sitting here facing Mordor and, you know, dying together in completely different ways? And that's very much what's coming out over here. It's the end of an age of the world, is basically what David is bringing out. And the time of the heroes is finished. It's time now for us to teach war from a distance, which means that there's, in general, from this point on, a distancing that we're all going to feel from life and from achievement and from the other levels of war, which is the Klei Milchama of Torah itself.